Ein wunderschönen guten Morgen, ihr hört Insel und Moin und das hier ist die Folge 1337, ganz genau 1337, Elite. Und da dachten wir uns, das wäre doch ganz cool, wenn dieses Thema heute auch irgendwas mit Elite zu tun hätte. Und da haben wir in unseren Archiven gewühlt und tatsächlich ein Interview gefunden zu David Braben, dem Schöpfer der Elite-Spielserie. Ihr wisst schon, diese Weltraum-Simulation-Geschichte, die damals auf dem Commodore auch tatsächlich angefangen hat. Und das ist ein Interview, das ich letztes Jahr auf der Gamescom geführt habe. Aus beruflichen Gründen bin ich leider nicht dazu gekommen, das zu schneiden. Da hat mir einfach die Zeit gefehlt. Und ich habe es aber wieder hervorgekramt und für euch als Audioversion ausgewertet. Ziemlich sicher werde ich dieses und ganz viel anderes Material, ein Riesenkonvolut an Interviews und Zeug, auch mal als Video bearbeiten, wenn ich irgendwann mal mehr Zeit habe. Aber hier erstmal für euch das Interview mit David Braben über sein Spiel Elite Dangerous, das Kickstarter-finanzierte Weltraum-Simulationsspiel, was es mittlerweile auch für die Xbox One gibt. Das ist ursprünglich erstmal nur für den PC erschienen, gibt es aber wie gesagt jetzt auch für die Konsole. Ist ein Spiel, das immer noch in Entwicklung ist. Das heißt, die Leute, die das holen, müssen sich im Klaren darüber sein, dass es halt noch Bugs hat und sich in den Funktionen noch erweitert und so weiter und so fort. Und ich habe die Gelegenheit genommen und versucht, mit David Braben ein bisschen auch über seine älteren Spiele zu sprechen. Er hat auch viele andere Sachen noch außer Elite gemacht. Und ich hoffe, ihr habt Spaß bei dem Interview. Das Interview ist auf Englisch, weil David kommt aus Großbritannien. Und deswegen entschuldige ich mich schon mal vorab für die grauenvolle englische Aussprache meinerseits. Also dann viel Spaß mit dem Interview.
David, I just played your game Elite Dangerous and I'm a little bit overwhelmed because of the Oculus Rift support.
Oh wow, it's fun, isn't it?
It's so amazing because it feels like you're there. Mm-hmm. And I played the original game when it came out. The very first Elite for, I think it's C64 and Amiga.
On Amiga, right, okay, so yeah. That was that 1984, 1985?
It's like years ago.
And oh, wow.
I had an Amiga 500, and yeah. I loved that game. But you did all this game by yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, I did Frontier by myself.
Okay.
The original Elite game I did with Ian Bell.
Okay, yeah.
Back in 1984.
So, was it difficult? I mean, nowadays, games are like, we want to make everything bigger with more words and more crazy stuff and so on, and they got a big staff of developers and like 500 people for open world games. And,
yeah, oh, I know, we've done them.
Yeah, and you have done it basically a few years ago with two people. How did you achieve that?
Well, I suppose it was easier then. The BBC Micro had 22K of memory.
Yeah.
So that's a tiny amount. That's less than most emails.
Yeah.
When I did Frontier, which was 1993,
yeah.
it had to fit into 512K of memory. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it fitted also on a 720K floppy. Yeah, so it's tiny amounts compared to today. And I think the answer is a lot of care to make the code small, but also we used a technique called procedural generation.
Oh yeah, okay.
So I did a TED talk about it. If you look for Ted Albertopoulos, you know, this. It's a wonderful, magical technique where you can create vast amount of content with a lot less art input. So I mean, if an artist now draws a panel of, say, a rusty metal panel, you wouldn't draw every pixel. You would use a noise generator.
Okay,
that's procedural generation.
Okay, that means that, like, for example, when I explore a new planet, the planet was put together by different variables. You got X, Y, and A, maybe, and then you set some numbers.
Yeah.
And you don't know. That means that you basically don't know by yourself what is in the game, isn't it?
Yes. Because the game, isn't that great?
That's amazing. Because the game writes itself.
I wouldn't put it quite like that, but yeah, you're right. I mean, but having said that, also, you know, the whole night sky is accurate.
Yeah.
Every star in our real night sky is in the game.
Wow.
And not only that, all the stars you'll see in a telescope are in the game. So we've got something like 160,000 star systems that are real.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, we go the whole galaxy, the 4 billion 400 billion star systems are in there procedurally generated. That's because even with something like Hubble, mm-hmm. you could only see 40, 50 light years, the faintest M-class stars.
Yeah.
And beyond that, they can't be resolved. But you could see them as a sort of a general sort of almost a mist.
Yes.
And each one of those is a star. So what we do is we make those procedurally. But they are real because we know roughly where they are and how many there are.
Yeah, that's amazing. Is that, do you get feedback from fans, from people who like to look in the stars, so to speak?
Oh, yeah.
That are very, that I don't know the English term, that are that used to look into the sky through telescopes and so on. And do you get the feedback that they think, this looks realistic, this looks like in space, basically?
Yeah, well, what we've done is that the night sky in Frontier is, in Le Dangerous, is... comes from the real data. It's not a drawn backdrop. And what we did is we had to add dust to get it to just to exactly match the night sky. And so we know where the dust is and how much there is. And that's based on essentially empirical data because we've got it to match.
That's amazing. So you added all the space stations to it and all the sci-fi stuff, but basically it's our stars.
It's our real galaxy, yeah.
That's great. So for the new island, I think when I played the first game, I was a bit overwhelmed by all these possibilities I got. Basically, I started the game, I flew through the space station, and I was like, wow, space?
Yeah.
But what now? Because we can do anything, everything in this game. And this time, it's a few years later, it's a bit different to design a game, because people tend to have some kind of lead mission-based stuff and so on. Are you afraid that... the new islet is too complicated for people nowadays?
No, we're writing the game for ourselves, and by ourselves I mean people at Frontier and all the backers as well, because we want to make this sort of game. We are writing a game that we want to play because we're also gamers. You know, that's why we added support to Oculus, because we wanted it.
Yeah,
and we
yeah.
thought, well, actually, we're the target audience. We want this, but also. I like games to be more complicated. I think a lot of games have been a bit dumbed down on console, just to make it easier to play. And actually, people don't need games to be dumbed down.
Yeah.
I've put teenagers in front of this game, and they've gone, cool. Isn't this great? You can put power to your shields, you can put power to your engines, all of those things, because those things have, you know, they have existed on PC games in the past, mm-hmm. but they've been removed. And so it's great to bring them back. And because we're not going with a publisher, we don't have those pressures to dumb it down.
So basically, you don't have this overused guide in the game. Like nowadays, a lot of games are like do this.
No, I know. We don't. No tutorial.
No tutorial. No.
I don't want a tutorial.
That's great. So basically, the player has to find out.
Yeah.
It's lucky.
But it's actually quite straightforward. You can work it out.
Yeah.
And also, you know, looking at how a lot of people play games now, they find a problem, they go straight onto YouTube.
Yeah.
So we will have guides on YouTube if people want them.
So,
but you're not forced to play it. And I think that's nice. You know, your car doesn't have a silly tutorial that says, now press the left indicator. it would drive you mad.
Yeah, right. So you have to learn the controls, you have to learn the game, the rules of the game and so on.
Yeah.
I have to ask this, but is there some kind of story in it? Is it...
Yes, but the story, I mean, with a... massive multiplayer game, it makes no sense for everyone to have to rescue the princess and to have a really guided story through it, because having such a guided story, everyone having the same experience, wouldn't make sense. But we do have a story, because the story is about the player's life, the player's experience and what they're going through. So people, depending on what your rating is and all this thing, people will approach you at a certain level and say, hey, do you want to join us? We've got this really great thing for you to do. And that is essentially how the story goes.
Mm-hmm.
And how the story unfolds, you get so much story just emerging from how human players interact with each other, that you get that level of richness. And we're sort of seeing it in the beta already. I don't know if you followed the thing, the progenitor cells and all that sort of thing.
I'm sorry, I just saw it today.
Oh, okay.
The very first time.
Oh, come and join us.
Yeah.
You can play it live now. You know, so that's starting to unfold. I mean, the way the development's going, we're 2 weeks into beta.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got a game now, but I liken it to building a house. You know, we built the foundation, so the first thing we did, we've got the moment-to-moment gameplay right.
Yeah.
Get the ships to feel right, get it to play well, and we added to Oculus Rift at that stage, right early on. Then we added network support, because getting a game to work on the internet is a bit of a challenge with Alpha.
Yeah.
Then we've added, you know, the gameplay loop and all this thing. We've just built it gradually.
Mm-hmm.
So on the house analogy, we've built the foundations, we've built the walls, we've plastered them. And now we've got a house, a watertight house, and we're starting to put the furniture in. That's the gameplay. So, you know, so more and more rich stuff.
Is it that, that you also learn from the beta, from the feedback, how the game will progress in the future?
Absolutely.
You really don't know what's going to happen
well,
next.
Well, the great thing is, we're doing, I mean, it's almost like social experiments. We have, so we've already got it in the game at the moment. There's a sort of, there is an uprising in a place called Erenin, which is a federal world.
An uprising? Wow.
Yeah, and it's, well, it's sort of a terrorist group who are fighting against the Federation, because it's a federal world. Yeah. And they've done things like they've, there's something called progenitor cells, which is something that people use to keep them young. Mm-hmm. Sort of a futuristic Botox, if you like.
Yeah.
And it's generally older people who buy it, richer people.
Yeah.
And this is a, so we started off saying there are rebels and you know, the Federation has a warship there that's helping. So you get a lot of the players siding with the rebels. But then we now say they're terrorists. They pollute these progenitor cells. That's the most profitable trade good. And it was made illegal because it was dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So they made it illegal until they'd identified the supply that had been polluted.
Yeah. So no, I understand.
And so it changes. And then people are starting to say, oh, they're terrorists. Oh. Maybe they're not so good. Maybe we'll side with the Federation after all. You know, so it's this sort of thing that we've also have the idea of, you know, you have a colony where the people are basically in slavery, mining ore and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that makes the ore very cheap. So the player has the choice of siding with the oppressors.
Okay.
But then their next spaceship will be a lot cheaper.
Wow, this sounds...
Or do you side with the poor, oppressed underclass who are working really hard and are trying to get out from under the oppression? You know, do you run guns to them?
Yeah.
And because I think that's fun as well. You know, it's a very interesting dilemma. And I think people will side with the oppressors because they want their spaceship. They'll justify it to themselves saying, oh, they're not real people down there.
Yeah.
This is just a game.
So basically you can join these fractions or you can...
You knew that already.
Yeah, so
you can sign up. You can see the fight happening, and they will say you get something called a combat bond,
mm-hmm.
where you'll say, right, okay, I'll join you for a short time, and I will get paid for every of the bad guys I take out.
Yeah.
By bad guys, I mean the people against those, because everyone is someone's bad guy, and that's such a conflict.
That's great. So for you personally, you did this game in the past, the first Islet and the Frontier, and it seems so. You also did other things like Dog's Life. And
that's
so
right. Oh, very played at Dog's Life.
Very, very great game, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
I hope you will do another one. Because
it would be nice to do that. Well, we did Connectimals, which is sort of the spirit, but it was a different kind of game,
because,
I realized.
Because this Mellow version was amazing.
I know, I love
because,
that.
Because I love this, all the space stuff and so on. I hope you're doing a second one. But what I think is you always come back to Islet, because it's... is there something about space that is fascinating for you?
I'm fascinated by astronomy, but I also like the freedom. You know, the freedom of going anywhere. I love the idea. I'm one of the people who's going to head out into the stars in the unknown. I'll fill up my ship with spare parts and all that sort of thing. And I just want to go out there. I love the idea of meeting other players out there. You know, sort of a Dr. Livingstone, I presume, moment where you find someone long, long way from home and just see who they are, see how they got there.
That's great. So when you got the possibility, would you fly into space? Like... space station or something?
It seems a bit tacky somehow. You know, it's one thing having a ship and heading off into the unknown.
Yeah.
It's another thing just doing it as a tourist jolly.
Okay, so it's like, it's nice to see into the universe and to imagine flying around, but it's something totally different.
Yeah, I love the sense of wonder when you see... that in the game you see, I don't know, Saturn or something like that, a giant gas giant with all those rocks and things like that, the majesty of space.
Yeah.
But I know what you mean. It would be nice to see the Earth from orbit, but the huge resource cost of doing that doesn't feel right somehow.
It's
not
scary
yet, anyway.
Somehow.
That's right.
Yeah, because it's all the open white open space.
That's
and
right.
You don't know what's happening.
That's right.
Yeah. But thank you very much for this interview.
You're very welcome. Lovely talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I'm really looking forward to this game.
Excellent. Oh,
so
thank you.
Do you know when beta will be closed or is it open?
So the beta will keep going. More and more people are joining us every day.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go for full release towards the end of this year.
Oh, okay.
But we're not going to stop development then. We're going to keep developing things. We said there'll be landing on planets. We said we're going to be able to walk around your spaceship. You're going to be able to get out.
Yeah.
little moon buggies that you can drive around in.
So we will add things that the community wants to...
Over the next months and years. You know, we don't expect this to stop.
This is great, because I think there's endless possibilities, because it's endless space.
That's right.
Thank you very
much. Okay, lovely talking to you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
One clap for synchronizing. Thank you.
Excellent.